we're going to be studying the life of Joseph from a filmmaking perspective. Now, this is going to be, I think, part one of two. The next time I'll speak, I'll do this, but of another part. But today, I really wanted to break down the story of Joseph and show it to you on how awesome, how good, how complex the Bible is. And after watching this, you can even go, or listening to this, you can go and go to any book of the Bible and use these same principles, pretty much, to find it. Now, the two things I brought with me today to kind of help explain this. All right. I bought a camera and an onion. Now, all movies, to make a good film, you need a camera, right? Without the camera, what is it? Just some sketches of whatever the person wrote down or whatever the screenplay is. But you need a camera to make a film. And you have, it's not just a camera, though, right? Without an onion, well, metaphor onion, you need layers and depth to make a really good film, just like this onion. If I was to open this up, I'll spare our eyes. Don't worry, I won't open it up. But if I just open it up a little bit, if I can. There we go. You can see that there's many layers to this onion. And that's what makes really good films, is when you have a really good film that has a lot of depth, a lot of complexity to it. That's why a lot of really well-made movies, people are still talking about it today of how it's made. Now, to kind of tie this into the Bible, here's a pencil, and here's a blank sheet of paper, right? Without this pencil and paper, I can't write anything, can I? No. Like, without it, it's just whatever I'm going to be saying to you. But it's more than just writing random words on paper. I need, again, have an onion, layer of depth. I need to have a good storyline to make a wonderful story. And the Bible, I think, truly is one of the most masterpiece ever written. There's so many great plots. There's so many really good plot twists. There's so many things that make a really good story. And if you look at the whole entire Bible as a whole, you have the beginning, and then you have the mid-body, and then you have the climax, and the climax is Jesus dying, and then you have the resolution. And what's the resolution? Us going to heaven. But you see this kind of plot in almost every single book of the Bible. You can flip to any book in the Bible, and you can see that there's a character. That character encounters a problem. That character solves the problem. That's usually the climax of the story, and then the resolve. For instance, you can take Ruth, for instance, right? She is Ruth. What's her problem? Well, her husband died, and she's, I would say, having a midlife crisis, even though she's in her, like, 20s, but she doesn't know what she's going to do with her life. What does she do to that? She goes and moves with Naomi, and that's where the peak of the climax starts, when she marries Boaz. And then the resolution is they start a family. That is just one, but today we're going to be taking that and we're going to be applying it to Joseph. Because Joseph is unique. It's the last story before Exodus. We've had this last time we talked, we talked about Noah and how it pertains to us today. But we've had so many more stories in between Noah to Jacob, that's Joseph's father, and then we have it set up to Joseph. Let's do a little background, though, like we did on the Noah. Well, who's Jacob? Flip with your Bibles with me to Genesis. Oh, hold on. I had this all good, but then I messed it all up. Genesis. Dang it. Really? Isaac. Hold on. There we go. Genesis 27, verse 1. Now, it came to pass, when Isaac was old and his eyes were so dim he could not see, he called Esau, his older son, and said to him, "My son." And he answered him, "Here I am." Then he said, "Behold, now I am old. I do not know the day of my death. Now therefore, please take your weapons, your quiver, and your bow. Go out to the field and hunt game for me. And make me a savory food such as I love, and bring it to me that I may eat, that my soul may bless you before I die." Now, Rebecca was listening. See, think about this. You have Rebecca, and then the other Rebecca, she's listening to this. Now, Esau isn't her favorite. Who's her favorite? Jacob's her favorite. She wants Jacob to get this inheritance because she's the one that she wants him to be head of the household. So what does she say? What does she do? Verse 6. So Rebekah spoke to Jacob, her son, saying, "Indeed, I have heard your father speak to Esau, your brother, and saying, 'Bring me a game of savory food for me that I may eat it and bless you in the presence of the Lord before my death.' Now therefore, my son, obey my voice according to what I command you. Now go to the flock and bring me there two choice kids of the goats. I'll make savory food from them for your father, such as he loves. Then you shall take it to your father. He may eat it, and that you may bless before your death." And Jacob said to Rebekah, his mother, "Look, Esau, my brother, is a hairy man, and I'm a smooth-skinned man." I like how he questions nothing of this plan, but he's like, the only problem I have is, like, hey, I don't have hairy. Like, my brother's hairy. That's the only problem he has with this. And she's like, okay, well, what does she say? And she said, so Rebekah took, verse 15, took clothes of her elder son Esau, which were with her in her house, and put them on Jacob, her younger son. And she put the skins of kids on the goats of his hand, and smoothed out the part of his neck she had prepared, and into the hand of her son Jacob. So he went to his father and said, "Who are you, my son?" And Jacob said to his father, "I'm Esau, your firstborn. I've done just as you told me. Please arise and sit and eat of my game, that your soul may bless me." But Isaac said to his son, "How is it that you have found it so quickly, my son?" And he said, "Because the Lord your God has brought it to me." You see how this, it's almost like, I like to look at this just the beginning before we even get to Joseph. This whole part, you have to think about the whole Isaac, Jacob, Joseph, his brothers, right? These are, right, we have the main, right now we have the main character right now is Jacob, right now we see. Later on, we'll see that Isaac and his brothers are the main character. Would you look at this? This whole story is family feuding about a broken family, and it all starts back, I believe, to Jacob lying to Isaac, his father. And he says to him, so Jacob went near, verse 22, so Jacob went near to Isaac, his father, and he felt him and said, the voice is Jacob's voice, but the hands are hands of Esau. And he did not recognize him because his hands were hairy like his brother's Esau hands. So he blessed them. And then he said, "Are you really my son Esau?" And he said, "I am." And he said, "Bring it near me that I may eat my son's game, so my soul may bless you." So he brought it near him and he ate. He brought him wine and he drank. Then his father Isaac said to him, "Come near my and kiss me, my son." And he came here and kissed him, and he smelled the smell of his clothing and blessed him and said, "Surely the smell of my son is like the smell of the field, which the Lord has blessed. Therefore may God give you the dew of heaven, the fatness of the earth, and plenty of grain." Remember that. Plentiness of grain and wine. I think this is a prophecy that is going to actually prophesy Joseph giving him grain. Later, we see that of the famine happening in Egypt, and I believe this is a prophecy that Isaac nor Jacob could even see it during the time. "Let people serve you, and nations bow down to you. Be master over your brethren, and let your mother's sons come bow down to you. Cursed be everyone who curses you, and blessed be those who bless you." So now what happens? We have this whole thing now where it's Esau trying to seek revenge on his brother. But then we keep on going, and it's been years past. And then we see, I had this all set up right, and then I actually messed up. Well, let me see here. Jacob meets Esau. Oh, I always say his name wrong. Chapter 33, verse 1. "Now Jacob lifted his eyes, looked, and there Esau was coming with him, and were 400 men. So he divided the children among Leah, Rachel, and the two maidservants. And he put the maidservants and their children in front, and Leah and her children behind, and children and Joseph last. Which is actually one of the few times we actually see Joseph and his mother alive, because later in the story we read his mother does die. But this is one of the few times we actually see this. But anyways, "Then he crossed over them and bowed himself to the ground seven times." Who else bowed to the... Well, who dipped himself in the Jordan River seven times to heal himself? Layman. I don't know. Kind of interesting. I just thought of that right now. I did go from jump to jump, so you just have to bear with me on that. But he crossed over and bowed himself and came near his brother. But Esau ran to meet him and embraced him. Think about this. He stole everything from Esau. Everything. He stole his, first of all, his birthright. Before in the chapter, he steals his birthright because Esau was really hungry. And now he steals his inheritance. Years have passed. He's married two people. He himself actually got, I guess, it says, you know, in the Bible, the God will seek his revenge. He does get revenge when he goes and he works for his uncle, and his uncle messes with him, and he has to work 7 years or 14 years to get Rachel, the wife he wanted, but the first time it was Leah. But you see here that you think it's over, but I believe that when you see here, it says that Esau ran to him, and he's like, brother, you know, how they are coming together again. You think that this family is going to get better, but then we start to see that no, this is actually a dysfunctional family, and I really do believe that it's Jacob's actions when he was younger. I think it honestly may have been, God had his hand in it, but I do think maybe the course of how Joseph got into power in Egypt maybe could have been different if Jacob hadn't done the things he did when he was younger. But that's the beginning. We have this plot kind of set up where we have it, where we kind of get the background of Jacob and his brother Esau, and we think it's happily ever after. But then, now we start the sermon. Up here, behind me, I got this. I think this really does prove on how well written the Bible is. I mean, this is, like I said, I think it is a writing masterpiece. It is one of the greatest books ever written, not just even from a Christian or from a secular standpoint, just how well written it is. You can read, as they say, the Bible a million times and still find something different about it. And that's how well written it is, because God's divine inspiration. I think if God writes a book, it's going to be pretty good, don't you think? But anyways, we have up here, I got this online from this is a Hollywood formula. And if you actually are to actually read this, you'll see about probably 10 movies come to mind with this formula. But I was actually able to take it and apply it to the story of Joseph. And I did edit some parts off of it, but it's crazy how awesome how they wrote the story of Joseph. And the story of Joseph is so complex. I mean, there's so many things on, you could just look at it. You could spend an entire lifetime just studying his dreams and figuring out how many times, how his dreams may have affected him later in life in different ways that he didn't even think that they would have been applied when he even lived it. It's awesome. But anyways, we're going to look at it from a filmmaker's perspective today. And up here I have the first introduction. Introduce the main characters, and I crossed off, give them a goal. So the B theme, introduce the main characters. The main characters are Joseph and his brothers. We see this in Genesis 37, verse 2. This is the history of Jacob. Joseph, being 17 years old, was feeding the flock with his brothers, and the lad was with the sons of Bilhah, I'm going to say that wrong, and the sons of Zilpah, his father's wives, and Joseph brought a bad report of them to his father. So we're seeing already, this is the second verse of the story of Joseph. We're already seeing so many things. We're seeing that Joseph, right, he is 17 years old. He was feeding the flock with his brothers, but they do something wrong. Keep that in mind, because that is going to be the beginning of this story. Him and his brothers are going to be our main characters, and we're going to see that even more. Now, if you see over here, the beat theme, full of himself. I would think, well, Joseph, first of all, I mean, he's you know, snitching about his brothers, then he receives a coat of colors. I think that maybe he's proud of himself and he has these dreams. And I think that is what the writer is trying to tell us. But then you see Joseph sold by his brothers, and that is where you're going to see, if you scroll down a little bit, Don. There we go. Second introduction, assembling the team. Recruit a sidekick or team of allies. State the goal conditions, initial plan, and the stakes for the A-story goal. And if you look over to the right, it says enter a new situation, stray from the pass, or cross a point of no return. So Joseph sold by his brothers. We see that what this is saying, this is supposed to be the good guy, right, joining a team. But we see here that the team is being made is by his brothers. If we look on Genesis 32:18, we see, so Joseph is sent by his father because his father trusts him to give a good report of his brothers, and so he sends him down to try to find them. And then actually we'll go to verse 17. It says, "And the man said, they have departed from here. I've heard them say, let's go to Dothan. So Joseph went after his brothers and found them in Dothan. Now, when they saw him afar off, even before he came near them, they conspired against him to kill him." So now we see that they are making a team, and their first A goal is, let's kill him. Let's just get rid of him. He is a problem, and we don't want him. Then they said another verse 19. "Look, this dreamer is coming." I almost kind of find that kind of humorous, that they're making fun of him. And now they saw him afar off, and they said to kill him, and they said, "The dreamer's coming." Verse 20, "Come, therefore, let us now kill him and cast him into the stone pit." Remember this, like how much they want to kill him. Remember this, because I almost see sarcastic, you'll see. Almost a sarcastic, whatever the writer was putting in, how funny it is, you'll see in a second. But "We'll throw him into the pit, and we shall say, the wild beast has come and devour him. We shall see what will become of his dreams." Now, there's a second part to this. Now we have the mid-act conflict. This is where, like, hey, let's kill him. Now Reuben pipes in and says, no, let's not kill him. Instead, we have a second goal now. The goal is now to throw him into a pit. And we see that Reuben said to them, verse 22, "Shed no blood, but cast him into this pit, which is the wilderness, and do not lay a hand on him, that he might deliver him out of the hands and bring him back to his father." So we see here that Reuben's trying to, like, flip it on them, like, hey, let's just lure him into this pit. Maybe they threw him into the pit. We don't really know. I mean, they hated him so much, I wouldn't be surprised if they just tossed him in there. But anyways, Reuben's like, hey, I'm going to come back and get him. But then we see he leaves, and they come up with their own thing, and we see verse 28, "Then the Midianite traders passed by, so the brothers pulled Joseph up and lifted him out of the pit. And they sold him for the Ishmaelites for 20 shekels of silver, and they took Joseph to Egypt." Let's back up a little bit, though. This is where I find the sarcasticism, what the writer's trying to put here. Remember up in verse 18 where they said they saw him afar off, they wanted to kill him. Now look at verse 26. "So Judah said to his brothers, what profit is there if we kill our brother and conceal his blood? Come, let us sell him to the Ishmaelites and let our hand upon him, for he is our brother." Just like, what? 10 verses ago you wanted to kill him, but now he's your brother. And I almost wonder if it was, maybe there were some other brothers in the group that hated him more. And they're kind of like, you know, when you get angry and then you kind of come back, you're like, okay, let's do a better thing. But it's still like, it's not what you should do, but you still do the wrong thing, but in a nicer way. Instead of killing him, they're just going to sell him as a slave, you know, worse than death. But, you know, he's our brother anyways, right? That's okay. So we see that is the first major act. And a little recap on this first act, we are introduced to the main characters, Joseph and his brothers. And we see that it almost appears that the writer is trying to show that maybe Joseph is a little arrogant. He receives these coat of colors. He has these dreams. He's telling his father and his mother, and back then during Hebrew times, that to tell your father and mother they were going to bow down to you, I mean, that they're the head of the household. That would be really a really huge, strong statement to say. And then we see later in the second act, these brothers are going to take the matters into their own hands and get rid of him and try to kill him. But instead, right, the first goal was to kill him, and then the second goal was to just sell him off as a slave. Now, there's a bunch of other stuff happens, but we're going to see, like, what happens in Egypt, right? There's a bunch of other things that happen, but what happens in Egypt? Well, let's look at Genesis 39:1-6. Joseph, a slave in Egypt. So the reason why I'm skipping 38 is because it's with Judah and Tamar. That's not what we're really dealing with today. That is a really good chapter, but we're not going to be dealing with that right now. So 39, verse 1, 1 through 6. "Now Joseph had been taken down to Egypt, and Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh, captain of the guard, an Egyptian, bought him from the Ishmaelites who had taken him down there. The Lord was with Joseph, and he was a successful man, and he was in the house of his master, the Egyptian. And his master saw that the Lord was with him, and that the Lord had made all he did prosper in his hand. So Joseph found favor in his sight and served him. Then he made him an overseer of all of his house, all that he put in it under his authority. So it was from that time that he had made it him the overseer of his house and blessed the Egyptian's house for Joseph's sake. And the blessing of the Lord was on all he did in the field. Thus, he left all that he had in Joseph's hand and did not know what he had except for the bread which he ate. Now Joseph was handsome in form of appearance. So that's what happened. So Joseph gets sold. This is more of a, like, I would say of a...
Let me drink some water here.
This is more of our kind of, right, our kind of like pit stop type of thing on the side. This is more of him just giving a backstory of Joseph in Egypt and what he's doing, right? He shows that Potiphar is the guy who sold him, which is really lucky. I mean, he could have been a guy in the field. He could have been a man of the field. I still feel God could have used him in some way, but I mean, that would have been a whole lot harder than being the man of the house. And there's a loss of responsibility with that, but he wasn't, I think it was a whole lot fortunate fate, and you can see God's hand in everything. And we can start to see here how the author is trying to slip it more of like slowly, like, no, he actually isn't stuck up. He isn't, full of himself, because he says, and with the master saw the Lord was with him, and the Lord made all he did prosper in his hand. So we're starting to see how the author is starting to flip it more, like saying, no, he's actually a good person, and his brothers were just envious of him. Now that is kind of like I say, the pit stop. It just tells what happens to Joseph while he's in Egypt. But now if we scroll down a little bit more, right there. So the fun preparation, I got all rid of that. The only thing you need to focus on, act two, major conflict test. Now in a movie, right, this is a little side note. In a movie, I think this formula, if you've ever seen Kung Fu Panda, I don't know, but for me, when I was thinking about this whole formula really, like, it just, that movie came to my mind immediately when I was reading through this, right? In Kung Fu Panda, you have the introduction. It's just a regular guy, right? Let's just strip it down from its animation. It's a regular guy. He sells noodles. And, right, you have this. His goal is to get up to this temple to sell food to this thing where they're trying to find the chosen person, right? And this is like a kid. I'm just totally oversimplifying this. This is like supposed to be a kid's film. But anyways, they go up, right? And you see that he's just a regular person trying to become a... I don't know, he's just going to sell food. But instead, he actually gets fireworked into the arena, and then the guy, he becomes the chosen one. And then when you see this fun preparation part, this is just my little part of my brain where I see the preparation and training is this little montage of him trying to do training, but he can't do it because he's just a regular guy, right? And then you have a mid-act conflict, preparation, training, and then you have a test. Anyways, that was just a little side note in my brain that I had a little thought about that. But anyways, you don't have to worry about that. Back to our story of Joseph. The second major act, the major test, the test. We're in our second act now, and there's a test. What is the test of Joseph? What was his test? He had one test. Does anybody think maybe of what his test may have been? Potiphar's wife. That was his test. Do you have to think about this? Let's read 39:7-12. And it came to pass after these things that his master's wife cast longing eyes on Joseph. Longing eyes means she was lusting after him. She was fantasizing about him. That's what we would say, casting longing eyes. And she said, lie with me. But then what did Joseph say? But he refused and said to his master's wife, look, my master does not know what is with me in the house, and he has committed all that he has to my hand. He's saying, look, I'm in charge of all this. My master trusts me. I'm not going to do this thing with you. But then she persists and says, he keeps on going, there's no one greater in this house than I, nor he has kept back anything from me but you, because you are his wife. How then can I do this great wickedness and sin against God? So it was, as she spoke to Joseph that day, he did not heed with her to lie with her. But it happened about this time, Joseph went into the house to do his work. So again, this happening, when it says about this time, it could have been whenever he, right, you have to think about it, he has a schedule. He wakes up, he has things he has to do. He's a, I think of it of our friend, they own an estate, or she's managing an estate sale. She has things she has to do. So when I think of this, when it says about this time, it was about the time of the day that he would be going into the house and doing things. And it says, it was about this time when Joseph went into the house to do his work, and none of the men were in the house were inside. Then that she caught him lying, caught him by his garment and saying, "Lie with me." But he left his garment in her hand and fled and ran outside. So it was then she saw that he had left his garment in her hand and fled outside, that she called the men of her house and spoke to them, saying, "See, he has brought into us a Hebrew to mock us. He came to me to lie with me, and I cried with a loud voice." I kind of, do you know what this reminds me of? It's in First Kings somewhere, maybe First Kings or maybe Second Samuel. Like, I don't know where it is, but when it talks about David's son trying to lie with his daughter, they weren't genetically related, but they were related through marriage, not by blood. I forget. I know Ahab or not? Maybe it was. Oh my goodness, I always forget his name. But anyways, the guy with the afro, right? That's a guy. So let's think about this. You have David's daughter and David's son. They're not married. They're not by blood. They're just married. And David's son, it says he's in love with her. He wants to lie with her. But then when she says no, he hates her so much more than he ever. That wasn't true love. It was just lusting eyes. He just wanted to lie with her, and he didn't truly love her. And then we see his other son with the afro. That's how I remember. He kills him, runs away, gets stuck in the tree, and he gets killed. But anyways, I see the exact same thing happening, but here. And you have to see here. It says she wanted to lie with him so much. But then when he said no, her hatred overcame the same way with there. And she overcame with a loud voice. Verse 15, and it happened, when he heard that I lifted my voice and cried out, that he left his garment with me and fled and went outside. So she kept his garment with her until the master came home. Then she spoke with him to the words of these same, "The Hebrew servant who you have brought to us came into us to mock me." So it happened, as I lifted my voice and cried out, that he left his garment with me and fled aside. So when the master heard the words of which the wife spoke to him, saying, "Your servant did to me after his manner," that his anger was aroused. I mean, how would you guys feel if somebody, it's attempted rape, right? What we are saying here, this is a huge accusation. And especially then a servant trying to do it to the wife. This is a death penalty. This is a fully death penalty. And I think there's a lot of similarities with Christ, but that'll be part two with Joseph. But this is a death penalty. The master is angry. Right? We start to see this plot, he's getting thicker of like, well, what's going to happen to Joseph now, right? Like, well, he didn't do anything wrong. This is where God has a hand in everything, because easily Joseph could have been killed. But then we see 20, then Joseph's master took him and he put him into the prison, a place where the king's prisoners were confined. Man, he could have gone to the slim prisons. And I almost think of it, you know, prisons in the 1600s, 1400s, 1300s, they had like the regular Joe's prisons. And then they had the king's prisons. You had food, you had books, you had pretty much anything you wanted to do, but you were in prison. I'm not sure if it was exactly like that during this time, but I'm sure it wasn't terrible. It was a king's prison, so of course it was going to be a nicer prison than the one where just like average Joes would be at. So then it says, put him in the king's prison and confined, and here he was in the prison. Verse 22, 31, but the Lord was with Joseph and showed him great mercy, and the Lord was with Joseph, and he gave him favor in the sight of the keeper in the prison. Now we're going to pause there. I kind of skipped one, but we're going to, if you want to keep on scrolling down, a little bit. Keep on going. One more. There we go. Setback after setback after setback. So after he does this test, I kind of skipped over this one. I get excited. Oh well. After he does this test,
he has a bunch of setbacks. There's a lot of consequences that come with this. He's sent to prison. I mean, think about it. He was the head of the household to now being sent into prison. And then it seems like it's getting a little bit better, but he keeps on saying, the keeper of the prison commanded Joseph to hand to all the prisoners who were in the prison. And what they did there, it was his doing. The keeper of the prison did not look anything that was under Joseph's authority, because the Lord was with him. Whatever he did, the Lord made it prosper. Right here, you have to see these setback after setback. Lord's still with him. The Lord. I think this is a good point. We're talking about it from a filmmaker's perspective, but I think this is a good point to tie in that the Lord will always be with you, even if you're doing the right thing. Even if everybody else is telling you you're doing the wrong thing. I'm sure Potiphar's life was very beautiful looking, and it would be a very hard temptation to not do it for him. But he knew that it was not right, and God was with him because of that. And even though everybody else may have said that was the wrong thing to do, he still didn't do it. And he got sent to jail, which could have been a death sentence. It should have been. He should have died. But God saved him. And then we see God saves him. And then we see the prisoner's dreams. Now, if you want to scroll down a little bit more too. Sorry. Now this, the whole prisoner's dreams, this isn't very important for what we're talking about right now. These dreams for this part two will be important, but for now, what we're dealing with is just breaking down the story of Joseph. And one more, sorry. Yeah, I skipped these two. There we go. The resurrection. We have neutral zeals for all return to the path. In this case, it wasn't his fault that he got off the path to becoming a greater person. We know that. But we see his resurrection almost. And we see that. Let's look down to Genesis 40, verse 23. This is really sad, honestly. So I'll just do a little brief synopsis on these two dreams. You have these two guys. You have one that's a cupbearer, and that there's another guy who's a baker. Both of them have been sent to prison. They both have dreams. Joseph interprets these dreams. The cupbearer's dream is saying that he's going to be able to go back to the king, whereas the baker, he's going to be killed. He gets his eyes plucked out by the ravens. That's part of his dream. And we see that happens. But then verse 23, we see, yet the chief butler did not remember Joseph, but forgot him. That's pretty sad. He says, remember me. Because Joseph is like, hey, like this could be a great opportunity. You can tell the king about me. And it's almost like a mini Daniel where he's probably thinking like, hey, maybe I could be a wise man or something. Like, just get me out of here. And we see that the chief butler did not remember Joseph, but forgot him. I do think this story, it could be its own book, the story of Joseph. I think the writer, which we know the writer, is Moses. Who is Moses? Let's think about our writer a little bit. Is Moses sarcastic? I would say. Sometimes he can be sarcastic in a lot of his sayings, a lot of the things he is. We also know he can be quite haughty. I think he put a lot of, I think we would call it dark comedy, into some of these things. When I look at it, he's like, yet the chief butler did not remember Joseph but forgot him. That's really sad, you know what I mean? And I feel like, again, when it comes back to with his brothers, like, oh, let's kill him. No, never mind, we don't want to kill him. I think that is almost a little bit, I mean, I could totally be wrong. I haven't studied the book of Genesis in this way, but I think that Moses is throwing a little bit of sarcastical humor at us just to show of how bad the situation really is. But anyways, we're going to scroll down now to, just stay here, actually. This will be perfect because I have my own things I've did. So then we have the triumph, and it starts with Genesis 23, but then it keeps on going to 41. 1 through 14. Then it came to pass at the end of 2 full years that the Pharaoh had a dream, and behold, he stood by a river. Suddenly there came up out of the river 7 cows, fine looking and fat, and they fled in the meadow. Then behold, 7 other cows came up after them out of the river, ugly and gaunt, and stood by the other cows at the bank of the river. The ugly and gaunt cows ate up the 7 fine looking and fat cows, so the Pharaoh awoke. He slept and dreamed a second time, and suddenly the seven heads of grain came up on the stalk, plump and good. And then, behold, seven thin heads, blighted by the east wind, sprang up after them. And the seven thin heads devoured the seven plump and full heads. So Pharaoh awoke, and indeed it was a dream. Think about this. He awoke, and indeed it was a dream. To him, we would call this these type of dreams nowadays. This is more of a new age thing people do. But a lot of what he's doing, we would call it like a lucid dream. Where a lucid dream, people do this. You can control your dreams. It is heavily a part of right everything that God does. Satan tries to make different, right? For what he's having a vision. We would just call it a lucid dream to understand it. But what a lucid dream is, let's say I go to sleep, I wake up, and I could be speaking to church right now. I wouldn't realize that I'm in a dream until I look at my hand and my hand's like glowing weird colors. You realize you're in a dream, even though you're dreaming, you can make things happen. This is what's happening to him. We would call this like a lucid dream. He's like remembering, he's woke up. I was like, oh, it was just a dream. You think how terrifying that is, watching, who knows what they look like, dead grain, eating plum grain? Like, what is that? How do you even imagine that? You know, that is, I would be terrified if I saw that, or cows eating other cows. I mean, you don't see that. Cows are like dogs. You know, they're just like, they're friendly to see a skinny cows eating the fat cows, the healthy cows. I would be terrified. And I think this is one of the parts where we kind of skip over these things in the Bible, but the Bible has so many different genres in it. We have comedy, we have romance, we have mysteries, we have horror. In this case, if you were to really make just these dreams to a 2-hour long horror movie, I mean, it'd be crazy. I mean, you could easily do it. And right, it's just a few verses. I feel like when we read the Bible, we always just read it as the Bible. We never read it like another book. When you read a book, we never read, I feel like, at least for myself sometimes, when I read a book, you get interested, like, oh, what's going to happen next? But the Bible, we've read it so many times, or we've read stories so many times, it's like, oh, yeah, we saw the, you know, the fat cows, you ate the other cows, oh, whatever. Until you realize the context of it, it's like, imagine you're in a dream and you're watching that. And I feel like that's some things we need to consider when we're reading the Bible, is totally like how much, you know, if you think about it like a regular book, how crazy this is that it actually happened. And then we keep on going down to verse 12. Now there was a young Hebrew man with us there, a servant of the captain of the guard, and we told him, and he interpreted our dreams for us. I skipped down too far. It's verse 10. Then when Ergo was ferry with his servants, but, I'm sorry. Oh, there we go. Verse 8. Sorry, there we go. Now it came to pass in the morning that his spirit was troubled, and he sent and called for all the magicians of Egypt, just like Daniel. Joseph is a Christ type, but I also think he is also like a Daniel type. Very, the life of Daniel and Joseph and the life of Jesus and Joseph are very, very, very close and very similar. You know, they'll be part 2 or maybe 3. I don't know. We'll just see how long it goes. Anyways, well, the Pharaoh was angry with his servants. He was angry with them, and Pharaoh was angry. Whereas Nebuchadnezzar was so angry, he wanted to kill all of his servants. But anyways, Pharaoh was angry with his servants, and he put me into custody in the house of the captain, and both me and the chief baker. We each had a dream one night, he and I, and each of us dreamed according to the interpretation of his own dream. Now there was a young man, Hebrew of the captain of the guard, and we told him, and he interpreted our dreams for us, for to each man interpreted according to his own dream. And it came to pass, just as he interpreted us, so it happened, he restored me to my office, and he hanged him. So then the Pharaoh sent and called for Joseph, and they brought him quickly out of the dungeon, and he shaved, changed his clothing, and came to Pharaoh. That's the ending of Acts number 2. Now we're into Act 3, and this is going to be, I have it titled, Rise to Power. That's even what my Bible puts it off, the Rise to Power. This is, we've had these failures after failures. You know, Joseph gets sent to the prison. These guys forget about him. The Pharaoh has this crazy, terrible dream. What does it mean? And now we start to see, this is the very low point of it. Now we're starting to see the rise. And I would say this is the beginning of our climax, and then there's a beginning to the end of the climax. This is the beginning to the climax, and this is Joseph's rise to power, verse 41, 37 through 40. So verse 37, So the advice was good in the eyes of Pharaoh and the eyes of all of his servants. Because what did Joseph say? He said, hey, look, these are two different dreams about a famine that's coming. 7 years of plenty, 7 years of famine. We need to stock up. That's what Joseph was saying. That's just the gist of all of that. So the advice was good in the eyes of the Pharaoh and of eyes of all of his servant. And the Pharaoh said to his servants, can we find such one as this, a man in whom the Spirit of God? Then Pharaoh said to Joseph, inasmuch as God has shown you all of this, there is no one as discerning, as wise as you. Kind of like Daniel. I don't know. Interesting. You shall be over my house, and over all my people shall rule according to your word. Only in regard to the throne will I be greater than you. Think about this. He was first, second in power to the house. And then he got cast down to the very lowest of the low. And now he's lifted up to the second in the kingdom. Does it kind of remind you of Jesus a little bit? Jesus was the second in his household. I would say, honestly, below Joseph, his brothers, but really he held Joseph out. I would say he's second in his house. Then he got told, he got crucified, right? Killed, lowest of the low. And then he resurrected, and now he's the second in all of heaven, with God being number one. Very interesting. I'll be part of part two. I'm just throwing these little teasers at you for part two. But this is just the overview of it, so we can go. I'll try to finish as next time. You want me to finish the rest of it next time?
We want you to do each part of it.
Perfect.
But you don't have time to do it today.
All right.
So your next sermon.
Perfect. We'll finish this. I'm just going to do a little recap. We've gone over this from a movie perspective, the first act and the second act of Joseph. We saw the main characters are Joseph and his brothers, and we saw that how they all started with, we had the first major act conflict, that was Joseph and his telling the dreams to them. Then we had the second part of the first act, which was the introduction of the team, Joseph's brothers trying to kill him. They had right the first goal, and then they had the second goal, and then we had them doing the second goal, taking him to the slave Urs, and then we have the second act, the major test, and then we just finished up the third act, which is his total defeat and his resurrection. Next time, we're going to finish the finale / the climax of Joseph's life. Thank you all for listening. Let's have a little prayer before to close. Perfect. Yeah. 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 I know. I'd like to keep on talking for hours too, but anyways, yeah, all these things, once we finish this, the part two of this, then we'll go back and really just look at just the dreams itself and how he's just like Daniel, how he's just like Christ. So we're going to be on Joseph just for a little bit. I wanted this first part, which we'll finish next time, to just be the overview of it from a filmmaker's perspective. And then the next time, it's going to, you know, once we finish this up, it's going to be totally deep dive into it and get into his dreams, prophesying later things happening and all of that. So, yeah, thank you all for watching. And let's do a little prayer kneel if you can. Dear Father, full Sabbath day. The story of Joseph is the last story before Exodus, and it's the best book to wrap off the first book of the Bible. The first book of the Bible before we've looked at the story of Noah and how it pertains to us. And now we looked at the story of Joseph, and just as an overview already, we can see so many similarities to Daniel, so many similarities to Jesus, and there's only more to come. And I love, Lord, how you made Joseph to really, really cap off the amazing book of Genesis to be then the intro into Exodus, Lord. Thank you so much for that. Lord, please help with all the prayer requests and all the praises we did today, Lord. And thank you so much for this weather. And please help us have a great potluck. In Jesus' name, amen.